DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by George Weigel, who is a distinguished senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, where he holds the William E. Simon Chair in Catholic Studies. He's the author of numerous books on Catholicism and faith, including Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II, Letters to a Young Catholic, and Evangelical Catholicism, Deep Reform in the 21st Century Church. With George Weigel, we go inside the pages of Roman Pilgrimage, the Station Churches, published by Basic Books. In recent decades, Americans in Rome have revived an ancient Christian custom, the daily pilgrimage to dozens of Rome's most striking churches during Lent and Easter week. Along this historical and spiritual pathway, pilgrims encounter hidden artistic wonders and treasured Christian commentaries, while also confronting the great mysteries of the Christian faith through a program of biblical and early Christian readings. The itinerary of the Roman Station Church Pilgrimage offers Christians an opportunity to reflect on the religion and ponder the quality of their discipleship. In Roman Pilgrimage, best-selling theologian George Weigel, art historian Elizabeth Liv, and photographer Stephen Weigel guide readers along this religious and aesthetic journey with gorgeous photographs and revealing essays on the pilgrimage's art, architecture, and liturgies. A reminder of the call for renewal and conversion during each Lenten season, Roman Pilgrimage reflects on the deepest truths of Christianity and the exquisite beauty of the station churches of Rome. We now begin our conversation with George Weigel. George, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Chris. Good to be with you.
I don't say this very often, but I have to with this one. This is one of the most spectacular books. It has become one of my all-time favorites, Roman Pilgrimage, the Station Churches, for so many different reasons. Thank you so much for writing it.
Well, as you know, Chris, this was a joint project with my friend Elizabeth Lev, the best art and architecture guide in Rome, and my son Stephen. And it's a project that we're just bringing to the public after almost 3 years of work. Liz, Stephen, and I spent all of Lent 2011 making the Station Church Pilgrimage in Rome. And it's taken us another 2.5 years to get the book whipped into shape. But I really hope it provides an opportunity for people all over the world to experience this extraordinary facet of Catholic life, which was a very large part of the life of the local Church of Rome in the first millennium, and has been rather strikingly rediscovered by the Americans in Rome at the end of the second millennium and the beginning of the third.
It's simply a beautiful book, and of course, yes, the images that your son took, just gorgeous, the descriptions of the artwork, but also the words, the prose that you use, the stories that you tell. I mean, the whole thing is steeped in beauty.
Well, thank you. I think all of us, all three of us, Liz, Stephen, and I, were determined that this was not only going to be a thoughtful book, but a beautiful book, because we're convinced, I've long been convinced, that beauty is a way to rediscover truth and goodness in a disenchanted world. When you meet something that's truly beautiful, there's no question about whether it's truly beautiful, and there's no question that it's a good thing that it is. So beauty opens up new discussions about truth and goodness, which, as you know, are deeply confused in our time. I might mention that while the book, the bound book, I think is really quite spectacular, the e-book is perhaps even more so, because the photographs in the e-book, some several hundred pictures, are all in color in the e-book. And the e-book has a I'm not a techie, but I've learned how to do this. It's got a zoom function where you can tap twice on the color picture, and it zooms out to a larger presentation, and you really get to see some of the fine-grained beauty of the mosaic work, the frescoes, the sculpture in these 40 of the most important churches in Rome.
I'll also put a plug in for another aspect of this book in connection with the ebook is the audiobook. That's I found myself, I had the Kindle version, and I ended up downloading the audio to accompany it and listening, especially when it came time for the prayers and the reflections. It's a feast for all the different senses. The only thing I can't do is smell it, but then again, I almost could.
Well, there's a bit of incense flying around at the station churches, so maybe it someday the technology will allow us to bring that to people as well.
For those who aren't familiar with the station churches, could you give us just a brief background?
Sure. In the middle centuries of the first millennium, the Pope would celebrate Mass each day during Lent in a very special way. He would lead a procession, the Pope would lead a procession, from designated Church A, called the Collecta, or Gathering Place, to designated Church B, which was the station church of the day. It was the goal of that day's pilgrimage. Mm-hmm. These station churches often grew out of house churches built over the tombs of early Christian martyrs. At the stational church of the day, the Pope would celebrate Mass with the people of Rome. And then at the end of Mass, they would break the daily Lenten fast with a communal meal. This station church pilgrimage eventually got formalized under Pope Gregory the Great, which expanded several centuries later to fill out every day of Lent, and was a very important factor in shaping the evolution of the liturgy of Lent. If you go to a used bookstore, if you've got an old missal lying around the house, mm-hmm. if you look up the days of Lent, you'll see a notation that very few people ever understood. It would say Ash Wednesday, and before you got to the entrance antiphon, it would say Station at St. Sabina. So even when this station church pilgrimage fell into a kind of hibernation in the first centuries of the second millennium, the stational notation remained in the Roman missal until 1970. So this experience of the Roman church during Lent in the middle centuries of the first millennium really was universalized by the fact that every missal in the world reminded you every day during Lent what the station church of that day in Rome was. And now this pilgrimage, the idea of going to each of these churches in a defined sequence, has been resurrected over the past 40 years in Rome by the North American College, the American Seminary in Rome, and it's now a very significant part of the liturgical year for English speakers in Rome, because it's not just seminarians and student priests who attend these station church masses. There can be several hundred other people, students from other universities with Roman campuses, English speakers working in the Roman Curia, members of the diplomatic corps in Rome. The English-speaking world in Rome meets at the station church of the day in Lent at 7 o'clock in the morning. This is real dawn patrol stuff, because the real way to do it is to walk it. Some people drive, but most people walk. And that means getting up at 5:30 to get to the station church of the day. It's a marvelous way to learn the city at dawn. Mm-hmm. And then in that experience of Mass at that station church that day, you are tied into the experience of early Christianity in a way that is very rarely captured in so poignant a fashion elsewhere.
I'm glad you used the word poignant, because I think that's what it is. And especially in the descriptions that you provide for us as we enter into learning about the churches and why they were established, the lives that they were wanting to remember, whether it's Saints John and Paul or it's Saint Cecilia. You break open in your reflections, George, not only the wonderful readings of the Mass that day or the office of readings, but then you tie it in with the life of that person who becomes a theology book for us.
That's Liz Lev's marvelous contribution to this book. Liz did all of the descriptions of the churches, tracing their history. It's not easy to describe an ancient, architecturally significant church that's been decorated probably a half a dozen times over 1,000 years and tie in the life of the saint in 1,200 words each day. But that's what Liz did. And I think her work on the churches and my reflections on the liturgical text of the day really provide some food for thought, not only during Lent, although especially during Lent. I think this is a book that people can go back to time and time, year after year. And I hope it also helps people, Chris, rediscover something I discuss in an opening essay on the nature of Lent. Mm-hmm. And that is that the reform of the Lenten liturgy over the past 40-some years affords every Catholic an opportunity to become a kind of catechumen again and to walk the way of the cross, the way of the Lord up to Jerusalem, in order to celebrate the death and resurrection of the Lord appropriately during the high point of the Christian liturgical year, the Paschal Triduum. So it's not just the formal catechumens who are on the last lap, so to speak. All of us are invited to enter a kind of catechumen at every Lent. And I hope this book helps people do that.
I'd like to think that I've read all of your work and have really absorbed it before, but I don't think I've ever seen this aspect of your writing where you really go into those spiritual reflections, George, and they're wonderful.
Well, thank you. I think there's some of that in Letters to a Young Catholic. Mm-hmm. I think there's actually some of it in my descriptions of various facets of the teaching of Pope John Paul II, for example. But this was a chance to do some concentrated spiritual writing, liturgical commentary, biblical commentary. And I have to say it was a very enjoyable experience. I wasn't doing anything else but this for all of Lent 2011, and it was a marvelous way to spend 7 weeks.
Did you experience an even deeper conversion in your own heart, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, that's not for me to judge, probably, but it was a very powerful experience to do this Station Church pilgrimage in full. I had done bits and pieces of it during other times I had been in Rome in the spring. It was particularly satisfying to be able to do this with my son, and we did the whole thing together, and then stayed through Easter week for the beatification of John Paul II, so it was quite a 2 months.
It's a wonderful approach to the totality of our faith, as well as whether you're teaching on prayer, you teach about discernment, the virtues, even social teaching through the experiences, not only of the readings, but of being in the place where at this moment in the liturgical year.
Yeah, there's something very intense about the Liturgy of Lent. It really is a condensed catechism every year, condensed catechetical lesson. And that's, of course, appropriate because the Sunday liturgies of Lent replicate the ways in which the catechumens completed their preparation for baptism in first millennium Christianity. So reflecting on the story of Jesus and the woman at the well, the cure of the man born blind, the raising of Lazarus, these three supremely important catechetical texts from 1500 years ago, breaks open whole new insights into prayer, into the necessity of ongoing conversion, and into what it means to acknowledge the Lordship of Christ every year. I'm also hoping, if I may be so bold, to say that these reflections I'm offering on the biblical texts from the Mass, as well as from the texts from the Liturgy of the Hours, the Office of Readings, might make a small contribution to revving up Lenten preaching a little bit in the church.
Oh, from your lips to God's ears, or from your pages to the preacher's ears.
That's damn really, right.
Oh, that'd be great. What I love about it, too, is that there are moments in it. It's like, for example, when you're at St. Lawrence Outside the Walls, and then you bring in Brother Lawrence. I mean, you bring in contemporaries, and how that connects with prayer. I mean, you do that from saints from Thomas More and even the writings of Dorothy Sayers. I mean, this is just a venerable well of Catholic spirituality all taking place within these houses.
Well, the Station Church pilgrimages, the Station Church of each day offers an infinity of possibilities for reflection. The fact that I was writing the book at North American College in Rome, where my son and I lived during Lent 2011, which has a marvelous theological library, obviously, you know, meant that I could take the time to bring to the readers of this book, or to the listeners, to the audio book, you know, what I hope is a real panorama of the life of the spiritual life as understood by Catholics over the centuries. And I hope it introduces people, in some instances, to a writer like Dorothy Sayers, who most Americans know, if they know her at all, is the author of the Lord Peter Wimsey detective stories.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know that Dorothy Sayers was an extremely accomplished Dante scholar, did a magnificent translation and commentary on the Divine Comedy, and was a very accomplished amateur theologian. So bringing people like that out of the woodwork, so to speak, is one of the pleasures of doing a book like this.
Well, in the spiritual dimension of it, too, I mean, you give us so much to ponder, and I think one of the standouts, for me anyway, as I was reflecting on it, you ask us to ask ourselves the question, am I becoming a saint? And it's almost that, can you do that every day, and in particular during Lent? What am I doing? Where am I? Am I becoming a saint?
Well, that is the point of this annual catechumenate that I referred to a moment ago. C.S. Lewis rightly said that what a saint is someone who can live comfortably with God forever. Most of us snatched up to heaven today would be rather uncomfortable. We wouldn't quite know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Saints are the people who have learned how to be comfortable in the divine presence. That's the task of grace over a lifetime. Catholics believe that process is completed in a post-mortem period of purgation that we traditionally call purgatory. I have some reflections on that in Roman pilgrimage as well. But that's the whole point of the Christian life. I mean, the point of the Christian life is to become equipped by grace, by habit, by moral habits formed over time, to be the kind of person who can live comfortably in the light and life of the Holy Trinity.
I'm so glad earlier you spoke of the importance of not looking at this maybe potentially as just a Lenten book. This is not, folks out there, you have to get it now so that, you know, you can absorb it. Yes, go back, I will at Lent, and go back to reflection, but there's so much here. By giving us that context of the liturgical year even, something that we don't always encounter in writing today. Most writing is, I hate to say this, very journalistic in its spiritual approach. And this is not one of those books.
Well, I think there's a lot of what I would call honky-tonk spirituality out there. And, you know, that's fine in its place. But there's a certain solemnity to Lent and Easter week. Let's not forget Easter week is part of the part of the package here. And while I hope this book isn't dull and ponderous and certainly not pompous, it is serious. I hope it's got a little wit in it. There are all sorts of fascinating stories to be told about these churches, their decoration, the people involved in all of that. But it's fundamentally a serious season of the year. You know, in terms of getting the book, several people said to me, this takes care of my Christmas shopping this year. And I would love to encourage all of your listeners to think that way as well. This is real one-stop shopping for Christmas, because it really is a book that I hope becomes a gift that keeps on giving throughout the year.
It helps bring in those connections, church history. Yes, it has the spiritual, and even the Catholic social teaching is lived out in the lives of the saints that you've described and through the scripture passages. There is that, how do I want to describe it? There's something, the word poignant, when we are taken to a place like, say, Prudenziana's, and we realize that Peter stayed there. Visually, you make the connection. And here's St. Peter in chains. This is, and how you describe how he's taken from that spot to the where he would later be crucified.
It makes this real. I mean, there's a sense in which encountering the deepest stratum of ancient Christian life in Rome is to be reminded that Catholicism is not proposing a story. It's not proposing a narrative, to use that horrible word. It's certainly not concocting a myth. Real things happen to real people in real places, which you can go to today, at times we can know. And those people, through the transformation of their own lives, transform the world. And they did all of that because they became friends of Jesus of Nazareth. They became believers in the risen Lord Jesus. And that forces you to face the reality of the Christian claim, the reality of the Christian proposal. Christianity is not proposing another abstract spirituality in a supermarket of spiritualities. Christianity proposes the truth of the world rooted in historical reality.
The last time that we spoke, you were just about to get on a plane and head to a conclave, having just published Evangelical Catholicism. And who would have thought that the future pope that you described in the book would be almost exactly the pope we would get?
That was what we call good timing in the business. But no, I think Pope Francis is very much a man of the new evangelization. That's the core of his of what he's urging on the church. Everyone has to think of themselves as having a missionary vocation. And for those who haven't had a chance to read Evangelical Catholicism yet, it's not too late to do so. The book is still quite available, and I'm happy the report is selling very, very well indeed. I think it touched a sense of what people understood intuitively we were turning toward as a church, and I helped perhaps put a little language on that.
If you don't mind me asking, what's your sense of the, is it uncomfortable feeling among some, either the right or left or wherever they may find themselves on a particular spectrum?
I think a lot of people are misreading the Pope through their own filters. Some people imagine him as what they've been hoping from the 60s on. This is complete foolishness. Some people are terribly frightened that 17 words in a 12,000 word interview are going to undo 35 years of Catholic experience. That's frankly ridiculous. If you read this man's homilies every day, if you look into his life, his thought, his writing. This is a radically converted disciple who wants to invite others into friendship with Jesus Christ. And we should stop applying filters to him that they're not appropriate to the phenomenon. And I think that's going to become truer and truer. People see that more and more clearly over time.
Well, in talking about Roman pilgrimage, the station churches, I wish we had more time, but I'd love to know, did you have a favorite? Did you have a couple of them, or was it too much of a Sophie's choice?
No, I mean, I really like St. Praxedes because of that magnificent Zeno chapel in there, which is arguably the only room in the world that can compete with the Sistine Chapel for being the most beautiful room in the world. I like St. Cosmas and Damian near the Colosseum because the apse mosaic in there is an astonishing 6th century prediction of 20th century Art Deco design. It's a marvelous business. So I have some personal favorites, sure.
Any final thoughts?
Chris, thank you for having me. I invite people, all of your listeners, all of your friends, to join this Roman pilgrimage through the station churches. It's a marvelous tradition that reaches back to the very earliest origins of the church in Rome, but it's now alive in the 21st century in the third millennium. It's become an American tradition, and that's something of which the church in the United States should be very proud.
Well, I thought after 6 visits to Rome, I didn't need to go back, but now that this book is out, I have to go back one more time. And with it firmly,
at least one more time.
Oh, yeah. With this book firmly tucked under my arm, I just, you know, George Weigel, thank you so very much again.
Thanks, Chris. Good to talk to you.
All right. God bless. With George Weigel, we've gone inside the pages of Roman Pilgrimage, The Station Churches. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to basicbooks.com, the website for its publisher, Basic Books, or you can find it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and or to download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join us next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.